This week on RSVP Update, we go retro with an old Dragon Scimitar and a look back at the launch of Pryftinus. It's hard to believe, but Pryftinus arrived 8 years ago in RuneScape this month. We look at how it's aged and why it's a hallmark of RuneScape design. This is RSVP Update, episode 900, recorded Thursday, September 15th, 2022. Pryf and Present. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSBNB Update. Welcome back, Tanis.
Thank you, Shane.
Also joining us this week is Thaxi. Welcome. Welcome back.
Hey.
Did I say your name right?
Close enough.
Okay, close enough. Alrighty, folks. This week is going to be another quiet week here at RSBNB Update, but nonetheless, we do have content that we've been working on for the last about 10 days or so to produce and deliver to you guys. This one's going to be a fun one. But in any case, if you're joining us for the first time, you can find full show notes at update.show. We talk about the weekly RuneScape updates and, well, I guess at this point, certain aspects of RuneScape history that are still relevant today that need to have a second look back, and that's what we're going to do this week. We're going to do one of our Then and Now segments talking about Pryftinus, the Elven City, because, believe it or not, 8 years ago, this September, the first half of Pryftinus was released. 8 years. 8 years, yeah. Tanis.
I know. Time flies.
It certainly does. It certainly does. But in any case, I am Shane12088. Tanis can be found at Tanis79, and Thaxi can be found at Thaxi. And we're gonna do our Then and Now segment in just a wee bit, but I want everybody to go back to January of this year when we had a series of polls done about the new retro overrides that were going to be coming to game. And this week we have the first new retro override available for 200 rune coins, 180 rune coins for members. And that's the Dragon Scimitar override, a retro Dragon Scimitar. You guys going to be picking this up?
Already did.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it might be quiet, but it's a damn good looking week, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a sucker for the retro. I was already, you know, I've rocked all these outfits, right? I've been rocking like Yak Track outfits and so on and so forth. And then lately, I went retro. I have the old dragon plate ornament retro skin. And so I was wearing that. I pulled out the old max cape, you know. And then when I saw this drop, I'm like, yeah, we got to have this. We've got to finish it off.
Yeah, there's two versions of it. There's the full-blown replica version, and there's a slightly updated dragon wing version with a little bit more decoration to it, a little bit more mass to the blade. I would love to get this, but I don't. I feel like I don't use melee enough to make it worthwhile.
Well, I mean, if certain skills, like I'm mining and I have my scimitar out,
right? But then when you hit the rock, the pickaxe appears again.
Well,
yeah, but your slings are still on.
Yeah, it's on, and. I mean, that's true, but what I do, if I turn my little equipment box thing on, and then I can just look at this good-looking son of a bitch over here and just spin him around and just, yeah, that's a good-looking guy right there.
You know what I'm wondering about with this, and I'm trying to remember what the other ones that were chosen were. Oh, here we are. It was the Dragon Scimitar at number 5, Gilded Armor, the Abyssal Whip, that one's going to be timely given the fact we have a new Tier 92 Whip, Dragon Claws, and Rune God Armor are the other ones that are going to be coming out eventually. And they did say that once they're all out, they'll be put into a bundle that you'll be able to purchase all of them if you want to.
Nice. You heard it here first. We trim armor.
Now, here's my other argument for this too, because the reason I wear melee almost always, and I don't use melee for a lot of combat unless I'm scything down Slayer monsters or something. One-handed melee and two-handed melee, I almost always have on for any kind of skilling, because bladed dive is just nuts, and I'm one of those dumbo humans who like wants to bladed dive anywhere. So I have, you know, my wise four and my wise four on one hand, and bladed dive or mobile on the other, right? And so I'm like, for divination, for agility, for like a lot of these kind of skills, runecrafting, you'll have things out. So that's like, even if I'm not going to use it for a lot of combat necessarily.
You've made a compelling case.
But, you know, again, with that said, like, I probably will also not be picking this up because I have a lot of one-handers that I do really like.
And I mean, my personal vote was for the Dragon Longsword. That one unfortunately did not win. So that would have been it. Instant for me, but I mean it just shows how timely those old RS graphics are and how you can even put those in 2022's game, as we've been talking about for the last 2 weeks now when it comes to graphical things, and it just feels natural for RS, I think.
Well, plus, like, again, it's, and I've mentioned this on the show before, but like, that is comfort for old school players.
Yep.
The Dragon Cemetery is an iconic. People use it for their mouse, people use it for, you know, any number of things. And so, like, it's indicative kind of to me that, like, the game is being comfortable and trying to be inviting to people who are familiar to the game from before, right? Like, this is a very timely release for Fresh Start Worlds, right? Like they were saying, like, corporate told the devs, you have to have bonds and rune coins in Fresh Start Worlds so that people can buy their cosmetics. They didn't care about the, you know, membership stuff as much, which, you know, give or take my opinion.
We got a solution for.
We do. And that's the thing, though, is that, like, people were complaining about bonds not being there. They were saying, well, the argument is people have to have bonds to have their cosmetics. And, like, I have a feeling that they will make some money. And again, I am personally a fan of Dragex making money. That works in my favor. That they will make some money off of Fresh Start Worlds, maybe people come back and think, oh, yeah, I want to play with a Dragon Scimitar again, right? Like, even if that Dragon Scimitar is overriding a bronze dagger for level three.
That's actually a really good call on that when you put it in that
somebody
perspective.
Somebody spending $10 to, like, I want my character to look this way.
Because we all know how important Fashionscape is. So.
Yes, it's getting the loyalty points to buy, you know, the replica things from getting Premier Club for the month. Like, you know, it's stuff like that that people are going to be like, oh, on Fresh Start Worlds, I think.
And something that I want to, you know, bring up here, it's how many games are out there that have a history like RuneScape does, and, you know, especially here with RS3, you can have the most modern, particled out outfit, sparkly, and next to it, you can have a look from, 14, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look out of place. They both look natural. They both look like they fit, and they both are respected in their own ways. Like, there's not a lot that you could say
different,
that
about. But not bad.
Exactly. And with this, I really want to see what they do for the Gilded Armor and the Rune God Armor in that case, in terms of making that from 2004 era fit into modern RS3. That's going to be an interesting thing that happens there too. And as we've been talking about, as we mentioned in the last 2 weeks, graphics team, both when it comes to items, character, and environment, they've been hitting it out of the park for like the past 2+ years now. So thumbs up.
I'm picturing like reasonable like lighting effects and shadows and things on the old chunky armors, right? Like actually being able to see some definition in that, because a lot of the times they were fairly flat chromatic, right? In older RuneScape lighting, they're going to be, with our new lighting stuff, they're going to be lit from different directions much better. And so,
you could have just stopped and said they're going to be lit.
I mean, that's the hope.
All right. What?
Nothing. Carry on.
Oh, is it too late to use the term lit, or is that many years past?
I don't know. Are the kids still saying it?
Lost me.
I don't know.
Oh, Lord. All right. All right. All right. We need to.
Time for patch notes. Time for patch notes.
Too much. Yeah.
All right. Only a handful of patch notes this week. Relatively small. Not as big as the previous week, focusing in on the wilderness. Brawling gloves previously were not giving charge if you got them from the Wilderness Slayer chest. That's been fixed.
Womp womp.
Spirit Realm portal located in the castle ruins in the deep wilderness is now visible. In the player-owned Slayer dungeon interface, Greater Demon and Hellhound models have been given their vitamins and now are back to their animated selves.
I want to interject for a second on that portal in the wilderness, because if anybody is not aware, you can teleport out of the Spirit Realm, but I actually don't know if you can teleport out of deep wilderness since the changes. I haven't actually tried. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, that still works.
Okay. That portal is a great way to get out of there if you're doing safe cracking routes.
Yep.
Just remember that you can teleport to that location with, I think, ancient magics or the obelisks. You can teleport out using that portal as a way to get out of the wilderness, air quotes.
Which is so weird, because
nice of them to make that visible and less of a hidden, like, hey, by the way, you could do this.
Because on Wilderness Launch Week, I actually used that portal, so it must have disappeared after that.
No, it was never visible. It was never supposed to be visible.
Oh.
You just activate the ring when you're in the correct set of, I think it's like a 3x3 or 5x5 of tiles.
Right, okay.
And it teleports you to the Spirit Realm. And, like, if you know that that's there behind the castle, that's cool, but it's an invisible, not unmarked portal that was discovered, right, by the community when we were hunting for the extra rewards from Summer's End.
Okay. That makes a whole lot more sense now. Reduce the amount of fog across the wilderness to improve visibility.
Good.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
Devotion now works against Abyssal Lords.
That's
it
good.
Didn't before?
It didn't before.
Apparently not.
Ouch.
How did I not know that?
So would that mean
those things I killed?
So would that mean then with this that if you kill one of the tendrils, then that you could use that to extend your devotion?
Oh,
I wonder.
I guess maybe that's what that means, that it wasn't working, because I thought it blocked damage, but it might have not extended off those tentacles. Yeah, or maybe they bugged it recently and just refixed it. I don't know, but cool. Good that it's working either
way
now.
Thank you.
Could
again.
Go and test it.
Thank you again, Tanis, for your sacrifice last week.
I just wish it had been more worthy. But you know what I'm going to do now? Because they irritated me. So I'm going to go capture them in my little jar. And they're going to my dungeon. And I'm going to kill them at my leisure going forward.
Yeah, they're an interesting Slayer task.
Lord.
My best way of doing them was with animate dead tank armor and the magic cannon. That's by far the easiest route you're going to have with that.
Oh, I just so happen to have Animate Dead and Crypt Bloom, and, you know, I'm thinking
Legacy?
Maybe, but, you know, I hear a lot about this fractured staff thing.
Oh, God!
And this is the power of the gods.
I just so happen to have about another, well, here in about an hour or two, I will have another 30k Elder Rune bars to play with. Well, I have to turn them into bars. I have the ore.
Oh my god!
Yeah, so... yeah, Tanis, you gotta let us know on this show.
Right?
You gotta let us know when you take over and go and spend that 120,000 gold. When you become 120,000 gold poor, you let us know. Because woo,
telekinetic grab will now correctly pick up clue scrolls.
It wasn't before.
Apparently not.
I mean, I know people did that to, like, save steps or something.
They did?
I think about clue juggling being a thing. Why? I know old school folks did it a lot.
Oh, no. The only thing I remember telekinetic grab was, the key for the goblin thing. I remember. Yeah, like in jail or something.
Yeah.
In, wow. From Dragon Slayer 1.
Oh, my Yikes. God. The modern use for telekinetic grab is getting pages in Elite Dungeons.
Well, also, like there's that gold bar in the Varrock Bank, and then people used to telekinetic grab their untrimmed skill capes, right, to keep them untrimmed. If I remember correctly, how that was done.
Sore spot.
I don't know if that's honestly been fixed, or if that's bug abuse we don't tell people about, or if that's just an accepted feature.
I don't know.
I didn't even know about it. Darn it.
Yeah, if you had an untrimmed skill cape, you could drop it, get your 99, and then telekinetic grab it, and it would stay untrimmed. And I believe they fixed that a number of years ago. It still works in old school, though.
Wow. Resources in Big Game Hunter will now appear on the map as rare resources.
Okay. Basically, they added a tree icon to the minimap for all the trees.
Yeah, and that kind of just makes it feel more kind of complete on the pseudo skilling boss front.
Well, and that's like if it's your first time entering one of those instances, you just drop a shark on whatever the pad is for that, for that arcane epitasaur, and you're just like vibing. You're like, what the heck am I doing here? It's just a thing. I like letting people know that that's there. Next step would be letting them know that being in the grass hides you, but.
If only we had a way to put that on the buff bar. Anyways, re-added the trapdoor leading to the Thieves Guild in Lumbridge. This disappeared with the graphical update a couple weeks ago, as well as remapping the trapdoor at the Lumbridge Watermill. Added blocking to various walls at the Edgeville Ruins, and the biggest one of them all, removed the flying donut on the east side of the Lumbridge Crater.
Womp womp. Sounds like they had some aberrant terrain.
Yep. Oh, that flying donut was a fun one, but in any case, you guys ready to go back to 2014?
Start at the time.
I never left. What are you talking about?
Okay, you're right. So we're going to do one of our then and now segments this week, and what we do with these is we go back and we look at an update that. Either we didn't have the breadth of podcast producers to cover it with, or its use has changed significantly in-game. And we like doing these then and nows primarily from 2015 and before. So Prif was an interesting one when it was thrown around in our producers chat, because everybody, I think, doesn't give a second thought to Prif being in-game right now. But what people who are new to the game might not realize is that Prif had actually been on the game map since 2004, because the idea in 2004 was to do a quick succession of the Elf quest line and finish it. But as we all know, there was a long hiatus of about 10 years due to shifting developers and different priorities within Jagex that didn't let us see the end of that storyline until 2014. When the finale to that storyline was pulled up against Invention at the start of the year. So in August 2014, we had Plague's End. And then a month later, in September, the first half of Prif was released, with the second half following in November. And this was, as you said, Tanis, one of Jagex's first forays into batched content.
Yeah, and I think we got so much that... You really didn't think about it too much.
No.
I mean,
it was Prif. It was Prif. It was on the map Prif. For 10 years. It was about time.
Well, and it's part of a whole cadre of cities, right? That like kind of had that same treatment, where Menaphos existed for forever, right? And now, to a lesser degree, Arpasandra, TBD, right? Like there was a whole series of places that existed that we never knew or did anything with. Fossil Island was another one that they have slowly filled out the map for a lot of these.
And I thank you for mentioning those, because there's interesting parallels between all these, and we're going to talk about how all of these landed at the end. And we're going to do our typical then and now treatment, where we talk about how the content was on release, a bit of a content overview, if you will. We're going to then talk about what's changed with the content, and then we're going to talk about what's being used now and versus what's being used on release, and how might that use of changed over time where applicable. And I think one of the things that you and I, Tanis, we always talk about on the podcast is the amount of polls that were done in that era, in particular because Priff was built at the height of the player power era and actually beat out Invention by 10% on the first poll of 2014. I know
alarming.
You and I were around for that, and we both have many times put our thoughts out on polls before, but going back to this poll, what were you thinking back then?
Well, complete disclosure here. Priff is my favorite RuneScape update of all time. I don't think it'll ever be top. And I actually feel like this was one time that democracy worked when it comes to the polls. Because this might be the one and only time that my vote actually counted and I got what I wanted.
All right. And I remember being on pins and needles for this, not knowing which was going to win this Invention elite skill following up on Divination. Because keep in mind, Divination came out in August 2013, and the idea initially was to release those two skills back-to-back in the same year. So we were thinking maybe a lot of people might go for Invention, but people did go for Priff when it was all said and done. But that wasn't the end of the poll story for this one. You want to know why? Because polls were also done focusing on the skill focuses for six of the skills that went into Priff, believe it or not. And like when you think about it, whoa. So, mining and smithing was chosen by poll. Agility and prayer was chosen by poll. And herblore and dungeoneering were chose by poll. Believe it or not.
You can kind of tell, can't you?
Yeah. I mean,
I'm going to raise my... let's just talk about mining and smithing first for Traherne. We didn't know that was going to be the city for it, but I feel like mining and smithing is a fairly logical choice for that, given where we were at with skill at that time, and Traherne Hour was known back then before the mining and smithing rework for spawning rune ore on one world for Traherne Hour, which at the time was a very, very rare commodity in that ore was competitive and you had to go to the deep wilderness amongst a handful of other places, including the Heroes Guild, I think, to find rune ore back then. So
yes, and it brought
a number of places, but
it brought the prototype for what we have with non-competitive mining with the Saren stones. And this was one that
ore.
I think,
yeah,
and I think this is one that worked thematically. This one, out of all the pulled skills, I think worked the best with the way with what we ended up with.
Okay,
yeah, I mean, when you look at Priff, these things are all, I'm going to say, kind of from our, like, then in that perspective, right? These skills, for all the pulled skills, are still things that get used to, you know, varying degrees, but, like, you can still go, it's still decent XP to go and mine Saren stones, right? The Draw Hour is still the best, like, source of highest level ores, right? If you can find ores that are harmonized next to each other, and man, we attended Traw Hours. Those were always an adventure.
I'm gonna be the first to say here, I never actually hunted them out.
I never hunted them, but like showing up, it's the discussion that was held. You just get a lot of people together, and there were some trolls that attended Traw Hour.
Oh, I see.
A little wild sometimes.
And all of my friends, like, they never missed a Tron Hour.
Right. Like, it was just good money.
Yeah, it was too good of money. And even now, especially before some of the quality of life updates were made to the new and improved smithing skill, Corrupted Ore was one of the ways you can do continuous smithing for a while when we couldn't do that.
Oh, I should have been doing that instead of my protein bars with the most recent Yak Track task I was doing.
Yeah, and it's and the upper echelons of XP.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, given the issue with that was that if you could just sit there and grind it, it was really great, but you had to build in time to obtain it because it was untradeable. Yeah. So if you also needed mining XP, it was really nice, but you had to couple them.
Somehow I pull. I have like 6,500 worth in my bank.
That's some smithing XP.
Right.
A little thumb.
Yeah. Agility and prayer? Am I raising my eyebrow at that for heaven? I mean,
I'm in.
I'm trying to put my brain into what the community would have been thinking for this one, because...
The community at the time was thinking, agility sucks to train.
Yes.
Give us a better way to train agility. Yes. And they did.
And they were thinking, prayer is so much running. Like, no matter how we do it, we're running. Mm. And so they...
It's not AFK, boy, yeah.
Yeah, so both of those...
They were the low-intensity training methods, and the agility at the time was the best XP per hour as well. Well, relatively, right. Yeah, relatively low-intensity, because you can't say that you have a non-clickable agility training method that you can do 100% flat-out. You can do it for a bit on the Heffen posts.
Yeah, well, I mean, low-intensity
is
fair when you're talking about prayer and cleansing stones, but this is one of the rare cases where you could say you are actually paying more for the privilege of having low-intensity training than you would have for the active training. It's usually the other way around, but with prayer...
Not really, though, right? Because, like, Well, firstly, agility, right? Agility, you could align your camera so that you didn't have to move your mouse. So you could literally just spam click, and you could be watching anything else or doing anything else, which you could never previously do with agility. You could make it so you didn't have to move your camera on, I think, the Gnome course. But, you know, this was a unique situation where you could literally not even have to move your mouse and be successful. The prayer is a really interesting one, because the prayer, when you do it with maximum bonuses right now, and a quick reminder... that altars and the new dust and the ectofuntus don't work on DXP, but cleansing stones do and always have.
Do the powders from Het's Oasis work on DXP?
Negative.
Okay.
Negative.
Okay.
Nothing. None of those XP boosts, to my knowledge. I could be wrong there. Somebody might be yelling at me in the comments right now, but that's fine.
I can assure you, though, as someone that got 120 prayer using cleansing stones.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, a lot of time spent at double XP, very expensive.
Well, that's the thing. I did them with a pulse core boost or cinder core boost and double XP and bonus XP and the full outfit and an aura active and only on half an hour. Like, I maxed out my buffs with the wise perk, the whole nine yards, right? And I think it got down to me where I got my 120 prayer there, and it cost me like 200 mil total. It was like 2 GP per XP because of all the bonuses I could have active. It made prayer relatively affordable, all things considered. It's still expensive, but compared to the bills that people would spend in the past to get...
Well, said like a true PVMer, right? Like, it's 200 mil, no big deal. To me, 200 mil, I'm like, oh my God, it's so expensive.
Well, also, it was my second 120 cape because I really liked it because I love that cape and I love the emote on it, and I wanted to have a version of it that didn't look chonky and didn't clip through my boobs. So...
Yep, it was my second one, too, right after Invention.
Oh my God, you guys.
What do you mean you don't have money, 200 mil sound expensive? We're going to just entertain
us. Powder burials cannot be used on double XP.
Okay, there we go. So this, I believe, on double XP, this is, when I did it, it was cheaper than bones, right? Like, that's my thing, is that, like, it was cheaper than burying, like, dragon bones in a person's, or putting them on an altar, rather, doing anything like that on DXP. It was like, this was the cheap way to do it, and it wasn't fast. That's the other thing, is those crystals, they're good XP per hour, they're still multiple mil per hour, don't get me wrong, especially with all those busts, but, like, they're not super fast.
No.
But you only have to move your camera. You literally tap an arrow key on your keyboard once every 5 minutes. You could literally put a 4-minute and 45-second looping timer on Google And then just anytime it goes off, you just click your arrow button, don't even look at your screen, and go back to watching whatever show or thing you were doing. Right? Like, you literally just go a full hour. You click once. It's the lowest intensity training method for any skill at all in the game.
So I raised my eyebrow initially, but you guys have sold me that this was needed. Because, to be honest, I have... I got 99 prayer using altars, and I never use the cleansing crystals. I use the agility course if I, for some reason, need to do a yak track agility task. But beyond that, not really. So you guys have opened my eyes to that one. Herblore and Dungeoneering was chosen as a combination. Of course, that's for Clan Melier. Obviously, let's just talk about combination potions. Those came out with this and have effectively changed
PBM
on that.
God bless Holy Overloads. God bless.
Yes.
Because we didn't have Overload Supremes on release. Like, right? They added a bunch of the potions later.
Yep. Okay.
But those Holy Overloads were there.
We're kind of going
left
into,
home without them.
Into now territory. No. But it's just the idea of combination potion and providing a way to make what at the time was a superset and have it in one vial that can now be six dosed, right? And those ones are, people forget that, but those are actually sellable. And I got 120 Herblore before the actual 120 Herblore update. And some of my stuff I did for that was overloads. I'm still working through my stack of overloads that I made during that. But some of the other potions I think I did the tradable warrior's potion for part
I did
of it.
A lot because
I wanted to be able
overloads.
To sell some of that back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The nice thing, and I think we have to mention this too, is we didn't have a lot back in those times where things were playing off of each other. And whereas we had these combination potions, it gave a use for, a clan we'll be talking about here in a few minutes with Ithil, because you had to have that sandstone, you had to have that those crystal flasks to be able
stuff,
to use those combination
you had to
potions.
you had to go to Demonheim to collect the recipes,
yes.
Right? Like it bridged content,
yes.
Love it or hate it. It did.
I actually got most of my recipes by buying the recipe token and then finding it quickly in a small dungeon.
Yeah. That was not my experience with it, but
okay.
You know, the other thing that was kind of unique at the time too was that 115 resource dungeon.
Yes,
where you
that's
just,
the other thing.
Hang on, before we go 100% on Dungeoneering, I wanted to mention the perfect juju potions as well.
Oh yeah. Oh, and the perfect plus.
True. Yeah.
True.
Because and we're kind of venturing into now territory again, but. Perfect juju mining potion, stone spirit, stamina refill.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even on release, the perfect juju potions gave a lot of the, like, they were still used, right? Like, they gave buffs that people used. They were very valuable, especially like the Dungeoneering ones that gave, like, a 4-hour mini overload for Dungeoneers. Like, there was a lot of that.
Increasing catch chance while fishing, chance of receiving double logs. Oh God, I can't believe I didn't. Or no, okay, no, sorry. Yes, I did.
No, you did use.
I did use perfect plus during that, but I feel like there was half of my 120 mining where I didn't. The half I did before Croesus came out.
Yeah.
Anyways, Motherlode Maw and the two sinkholes, or Dungeoneering resource dungeons rather.
Yeah, and that's the interesting one to me is that they build this as the Dungeoneering group, and they like tied the resource. But the thing about it was that it was tied to high level Dungeoneering specifically. Mm-hmm. Now a lot of the stuff in Prif was like specifically like you had to have 75 or above to be able to access the skilling method. But like these Dungeoneering levels were like one of them. Let's be honest, is a Hunter dungeon that gives you a card for Dungeoneering, right? Like.
Yeah.
Like, and they added a Bloodwood tree into it, and that's lovely, but it's just, it's Impling. It's an Impling dungeon. And then the other one that's the Edemu is Slayer and the maxing and comping grind with the Motherlode Maw, which good rewards for having Dungeoneering levels, but
95
not necessarily
and
115. Not necessarily Dungeoneering content.
Yeah, and you know, going back, I think one of my biggest things at the time, because Dungeoneering would have been 4 years old or so when this came out, is that I was hoping for a different way of training Dungeoneering.
And that's what we got with – that's the thing is that we got a new agility course. We got a new prayer training method. We got a new mining AFK method and smithing. We got – right? Like almost everything in Prif is easier access to an existing or a new, fully new skilling method. And we'll talk about some others, I think, that are the exception to this too. But Dungeoneering really seems to me to have been – it's one of the 16 core skills for Prif. But it seems like it was kind of – or 18 if you count all the melees. But it seems like it was kind of skipped over in terms of an actual training method.
Well,
and again,
I'm
not asking them to make a whole new training method for Dungeoneering because that's an adventure.
Well, and I think that was the limitation, right? Because yeah. Dungeoneering is such this self-contained minigame that
right.
I don't know if we were ready for Elite Dungeons yet.
No.
Even – I mean, look how long it took to get that, which is basically the only – alternative.
Hey, don't short my shifting tombs that much. Come on now. They tried.
We'll get
then and now on Menophos is a future problem.
we'll get there.
Oh boy. We did do a Menophos retrospective this summer, but we didn't give it the full then and now treatment, I don't think. We'll have to go back on that maybe at some point.
Yeah, we'll go back and take a listen to it and maybe give an update to our update.
And I didn't feel like we had to because I mean we had all the smart people on the podcast at the time.
I have a strong feeling that in our discussion of our exciting Fresh Start World coming up, we will have some discussion.
We'll all
about
be going to
Menophos.
We will have a new appreciation.
Yes, having actually played through it on medium level accounts, right?
Yeah.
Where it's intended for, and not 99 accounts who are just there to try to get quest progress in collections.
Anyways, that's a future problem.
Yeah.
So, you know what we're discussing here? And we need to – there's two things. You know, there's significant consultation in the community around these polled skills and just in general the design of Prif. There were design documents put out that were actually formatted as things that could be printed as actual books. There were Google Docs on some of the actual training methods and such. And this was spearheaded by Maud Osborne. And
Maud Elfborn, excuse me.
Maud Elfborn. And,
there we go.
I remember when he departed Jagex, we put out a nibble talking about his contributions, and we put Prif as one of the biggest ones out there on that.
And, unquestionably.
And I feel like what we're talking about right now really just underscores Maud Osborne's work as a designer.
It was brilliant. I mean, it was the high-level hub. Thought it was supposed to be.
It is the high level hub.
Yeah, I mean,
it survived the test of time.
Yes, absolutely.
Wild.
It was the meta for a lot of the skills at the time, and it was wrapped into this beautiful lore bow that I still love. It's still
and
one of the
quest
best favorite stories. Oh, talking about quest requirements. But it was so worth it. I mean, the kick in the door, it was worth it. Kick in the door, wave the full
pole. Walking, I don't know if you remember this, walking into Prif.
Yes.
Past, and as you walk past each of the clan leaders, they give you a hey, welcome. They throw something up overhead. They say, this is it. And you get that opening, got to make sure your roofs are on, cutscene, or you just get blue sky. But oh my gosh, it's so gorgeous. That cutscene of entering the city, and you're like, oh, shoot.
We got to underscore how special that is. And, you know, it's still special today, but let's just go back to 2004 when we entered on that. And it just underscores what we had been waiting for so long on that. And, you know, we're venturing into now territory, which I think we can do. But before that, I want to thank our Patreon supporters for this week on the podcast. I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Bear Down, Beekeeper Steve, Big Huge Rat, Brian Flex, Chunk the Monk, Cycle RS, Diana, Dominic F., Drama Free, Elo Matey, Flaws of Man, Free Milk, Jacob G., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Ling01, Lucky Ducky, Mohan V., Nate the Great, Nick G., OTR Gamer, Parnassius, Renhawk, Ricky A., Samuel FL, Skiotan, Scott DS, Stubby, Tabby, The Naked Captain, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us, and you can check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/rsbnb. And there, for starting as little as $1 a month, you'll gain access to our monthly bits, which are a bonus show that we put out. The one we did last week and put out was the skill tier list. Tannis, any teasers, thoughts you want to put out to the listeners to encourage them to listen to our skill tier list?
Yeah, spoiler alert, Shane hates Slayer. I don't know if anyone knew
that. Big surprise.
Yeah.
I'm shaking my head audibly right now.
We, for what it's worth, we had three S tier skills. I'm not going to say what they are, and one D tier skill. And listeners can use their imaginations of what might be S and D, but
this
would
have been a different list if I was.
you could have been there. You wanted to let someone else have a chance, though.
So. I did. I've been a lot of them recently.
But if a skill tier list in typical RSBNB update fashion sounds interesting to you, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. You get access to that one and 49 others for as little as $1 a month. And these aren't just your regular skill tier list you find on the internet. We rated them to Sirion's patented rubric talking about three different aspects of the skill, just like we did with the PVM side and just like we did with the daily side. So that was a good one. And once again, Patreon members vote on the monthly bid, and they chose this one with 100% of the vote. So... It might sound like I'm overselling it, but I'm not. We also do have a VIP tier for $3 a month, where you'll get a special rank on Discord, a chat channel, and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, plus stereo versions of the show. And if you want to give the ultimate gift, we have our insider tier, where you'll receive a shout out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. So big thank you to everybody who supports RSBNB Update and RSBNB. We truly appreciate it. We're still working towards our Hot Ones challenge. Should we ever be gracious enough to receive the $500 a month? Well, Tannis, myself, and others will subject ourselves to some painful spicy sauce. So, yeah, we're under halfway there. But if any of this sounds interesting to you, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone. All right. So 2022, the poll skills in Prif, Trehernauer. Of course, with mining and smithing, that was changed to light and dark Animica. I feel like it's not nearly the draw it once was, Tannis. Maybe you can tell us otherwise, since you've been doing a lot of mining and smithing recently.
No. I mean, you know, let's be honest. It's not, because Ruin doesn't have the prominent spot that it once did. That being said, Saren stones are still the highest XP.
Passive mining.
Well, but it's all passive mining.
I mean, if you're wanting to be 100% passive and not do the active business, right? So.
It's still. I'm pretty sure that rate is still. It's still higher. It's higher than light or dark Animica with Rockatunities.
Yeah, but so, I think if you were to 4-ticket.
I'm not sure. From what I understood.
Either way, it's high. I mean, that's high. Matters, right?
I think
it's
Animica is 60% of what you get from Saren Stones.
Okay.
Saren Stones are up there. I mean, the drawback, of course, you don't get anything you can sell, and the. There is certainly value in Animica, and that's you're saying about Trehernauer. especially, is that you find those two Animica of the same type next to each other, and Tri-Hour can be incredibly profitable to you, and it will be that best kind of source of ore and an excellent source of experience. Something certainly worth doing, and they have kept it as a very viable way to gain money through the mining skill. It's probably one of the best ways to gain money through mining is that Tri-Hour. So they kept some of the essence of it and just drew out a lot of how purely profitable it was by making armor that requires every bar and not just one specific type of bar being highly valuable for alchemy purposes. So,
I want to talk about something in between then and now. Do you guys remember when the Prif Gemrogs briefly gave Onyx?
Oh, yes. The Iron Men certainly do.
Yeah. That was a nice little gold rush.
And, you know, it's so weird because at the time the conversation was, let's not devalue Onyx. But after that, every Elder God Wars boss and stuff that came out in the intervening period seemed to drop Onyx after that. So with the current price of Onyx, did they need to remove Onyx from the Prif Gemrocks, I wonder?
I think the argument there is that obviously Onyx are used for PVMing. Their primary purpose is recharging jewelry used during PVMing. So, or, you know, Slayer or similar. And so they are dropped by things that, like, it is that type of content. If more people do that content spits out more Onyx, and so it balances itself, versus if you have them dropping from a skilling method. And we should be clear too that skill method should provide more things to promote combat. Like I strongly agree with that, right? Like farming, herbs all coming from boss drops to make overloads, right?
No.
Like, I get why they've done it because again, same reasoning, but
you gotta have a healthy balance, right? Like you can't have it all from Slayer, you can't have it all from PVM, you can't have it all from skilling.
Yeah, and these weren't passive rocks. Like the gym rock, you had to click every time.
Right.
Right. So, you guys are going to have to help me with this because at one time I thought even when it had gotten down, its out price was still super high. So
it was a mill. Yeah.
It was a mill.
They
That's
got down
right.
to out price.
Like, yeah. They got down to out price, which is still a mill. Like I didn't know. Yeah, I wish it had stayed, but
I mean they're still at Alk price currently. They're actually 10k gold below Alk price is the GE price right now, which is interesting.
I don't know if we needed to take them away. I mean, how much they can't go under Alk.
I mean, the value that we got from taking them away is that it gave us a drop slot on boss drops to say, hey, this is a nice reward. This is a valuable reward you get from your boss.
And then came Onyx Dust.
Yes, well, then there's that too.
So,
seemed like maybe a more healthy way than dropping whole Onyxes, but...
Yeah. I mean, a mill drop, though, on anything is good.
Yeah, that's true.
Truth... I mean, that's a good...
And that seems to be the whole general philosophy that we had with Zamorak and the Elder God Wars bosses is just, you know, very generous drops and consultation of what the community wanted and felt was needed and whatnot. So before we move on to Heffen, I realize we didn't mention the wood tree spot in Traherne. So there's that. That helped us
for farming, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, nope. I mean, I think, why don't we talk about all of the farming patch locations? They're still useful, they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll do a quick, there's a farming patch in all these, and when we get to Karus, we'll have a longer conversation about them, but let's actually save it for then.
Yeah, so Heffen, today where we're at, I mean, we
Anachronia exists, so it's not useful.
It's not, but it's... It requires a little less focus than Anachronia, as Tanis can probably attest with the accessibility side.
That's what I was going to bring up. Like, I mean, it is faster, but for me, this was... I mean, it takes so long for me to find the right click spot in Anachronia that Heffen's still very viable for me.
Heffen is about 100,000 experience an hour, which doesn't feel great compared to a lot of other XP per hour we get for most other skills. And from that aspect, it makes the agility skill to me, even though it might be more accessible, feel much more like a drag. I mean, Anachronia agility, like you mentioned, is in no way passive and hard to AFK and hard to have other things going for other than maybe music.
Right, and the Anachronia agility course is the moneymaker.
Which I didn't even think about that, too. But it is also significantly 2 to 4 times more experience per hour if you know the route, and you can see and use the route around it. I will say, for the Heffen side of things, the Serenity Pillars are still, once you've exhausted your
still
manual, your auto cycles, well, they're the best source for the agility pets because they are AFKable and they are fast agility ticks.
Okay.
So those, or if you can be really sweaty on the Anachronia course, but then you have to be really sweaty, then the Serenity Pillars you do not.
I was going to say, if you're on your max grind, the Serenity Pillars are great for Jack of Trade.
Astonishing. Yeah. I mean, Priff in general is amazing for Jack of Trades.
Yes. Yes.
So we'll put that up there as like, yeah, good job with this. Good, self-limiting.
And I mean,
fully
the biggest limitation of Heffen agility is the agility skill itself. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I think
true.
That's fair.
But the prayer is absolutely still used. If you go on half an hour in DXP, you'll see a ton of people there. So it's not the best XP per hour. It's not always the cheapest, but it is.
It was designed very, very well.
Yes, it's a good alternative training method. So good job on that. That I think survives to this day.
Maybe
I think we're going to find that for a lot of these.
Maybe I should have put prayer at S tier on the skilling tier list then.
I tried.
No, sorry. Just to go back to that, I tried to put a certain skill at S tier, and I was told no, just as another teaser for that. But
gee, I wonder.
In any case, Heffen makes sense with agility and prayer, and definitely on the DXP side of things for the cleansing stones. Melier, combination potions, absolutely critical to modern PVM. Motherload Maw, good daily. Everybody should do. I forget to do it.
Not everybody should do. Many people should do. I should not do it.
No, you should
there
not.
There is no reason for me to go to the Maw.
No.
With that said, yes, I did the Maw for years and do recommend it.
Do we have anything else in Melier aside from the combination potions?
Edemu were added.
Yeah,
and the Blood Fury stuff. Edemu were still excellent. I don't know that Edemu were there on release, but... those are an excellent Slayer task. It's good XP. It's good money. Still relevant. Still used. As far as I'm aware, unless they've been put on the ban list, which, you know, I have.
Oh, they should
too,
never be on the ban list.
Oh, my God. We're not going to have a Slayer discussion right now.
Yeah, we are. I dislike the ban list as a concept. I banned the things I didn't want to do, regardless of the amount of XP they gave. That's just me. All these people are like, oh,
right,
you're doing it wrong.
Like, I put Hydrox Dragons on the ban list. There you go, Tanis. I said it.
They're on there for me too. No, they're on there for me too.
What?
I can't. Gemstone Dragons, they took so long to kill. Their drops were atrocious. I didn't want to do them. That was during my Slayer grind. If I didn't ban the things I didn't want to do, I would have been so miserable for so long, regardless of the XP rates, that I would have taken me longer to finish it. So that was how I justified it to myself, and I still support that outlook.
I'm 120 and I'm not looking back.
It feels blasphemous to me.
Treasure Hunter was very kind to you.
Right, then we get to the point where I need to talk about the fact that I don't have a complete Slayer helmet yet, and I don't have a of
you have a complete Slayer helmet. You don't have a fully upgraded Slayer helmet.
Correct.
There is a difference.
True. Good point. Good point.
Don't undersell that one that hard. Either way.
And I don't have all the stuff on the tool belt. Anyways.
Edamu are fine. Miller's good. We can move on.
Yeah. The Fate of Poles in open design. I feel like this is probably opening up a Pandora's box here.
No, Syrian's not here. It'll be fine. Pole in open design. I mean, we've talked about it before on the show. I'll do the liner for this, that sometimes what the community wants isn't healthy for the community, and the community is dumb. Sometimes that's true, and it's accurate.
Yeah.
The community has excellent ideas and should be used, but there's a time and a place, and it sounds like Jagex, I mean, takes one hardliner on this or the other, unfortunately. They've done a pretty good job more lately of including more community design and feedback and things into some of their content, taking community memes and making them reality. But by and large, going the direction they understand to be healthy for the game, given their knowledge of game design. And it seems to be working relatively well. So
how do we feel about this, Tamis, in the post-Warden era?
We've seen it go back and forth, right? We saw this be the height, like you mentioned, and then we got away from it. And we got away from it, and we saw what could happen with strong leadership and a strong idea, of how things should be, and that worked. I actually think Prif worked despite the polls, because you have to give Mod Osborne a lot of credit. And the whole team that worked on Prif found a way to make it work when I think less talented people would not have been able to do the same.
Yeah.
With the polls they were given.
They were careful in presenting poll options to us as well, I think. I think that they had some ideation in advance of, like, we know how we're going to make this work if they decide to do this.
And to be fair, we weren't polled on in what the skilling methods what they would be. We were just polled on what skills would you like to see represented.
Yeah.
Right.
And we weren't even polled on the combinations of them. Obviously, you know, some like mining and smithing, we knew those would be together. But agility and prayer together? Herb lore and dungeoneering together?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They found a way to make it work, and it did. It worked pretty well.
So, and I think that kind of can pivot us into our first discussion on this about the pole-based design and what we have in these first three clans here, about what was meta there and what still is meta today. And I think what we have talked about with this, minus the change of Trehearne Hour, everything that was brought in with Prif is still very usable today.
It's still very
for these three clans.
I'd argue the agility course is less impactful than it was on release, but as Tannis mentioned, still viable and valuable as a part of the game. Right? We can't say that it doesn't have a space. So,
and I mean, I have to agree with that, right? Like, I think from a certain kind of play style, it's viable, and from an accessibility standpoint, it's viable. But you know, I think it's fair to say that, you know, it's less. It's not the meta that it was. But a lot of the others are still, you know, like I said, I mean, Saren Stones are still the best. They survived.
Spending 3 hours on the Heffen Agility course to obtain all of the pages for the lore book there doesn't feel as good now as it did on release.
Oh, no. Do
like,
I need,
oh, yeah. Do I'll I do need, the meta agility training.
Oh, no. Do I need to do that for Master Quest or Trim?
Let's move on.
And now here's the other thing with the Heffen. Remember this? That's where you got your Crystal Acorn. And you had to have your Crystal Acorn.
Heffen?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's where I got mine.
I got mine from Crystal Impling. I got lucky.
Oh, yeah.
It's a 1 in 34, I think.
Yeah, I had a hail of a time. Something I had like to that. Do that for some... I forget what it was. I had to do it for something. But no, I got my acorn on Heffen.
Yeah. But speaking of acorns and growing,
you can also
in patches,
you also get the crystal acorn when you enter the Max Guild for the first time.
Yes, also guaranteed.
Oh, okay.
But speaking of the crystal tree patch and growing things in patches around Prifthanas, I think that's an excellent bridge into
Cruis. Yeah.
Into our pole, but non-pole based skills.
Yeah. Cruis clan farming and woodcutting. Back then, you magic and ivy woodcutting plots, along with bush, herb, and elder tree patch in Cruis, and
elder, shiny,
and in Traherne, of course, the regular wood tree spot.
Yeah. So one of each, pretty well.
And the fruit tree spot. And the fruit tree spot up in Melior, too.
Yeah, I mean, one of each patch, more or less. A lot of the important ones. And the ivy. The ivy that gave 20% extra ivy experience. Talk about the equivalent to Saren stones.
Right.
That was very solid. And I think, honestly, still might be very solid woodcutting experience. It is.
I think you're only outdone by
crystal geodes,
by the crystal trees, and then beyond that, crystallizing Acadia.
Yes. So,
golden bamboo, though, but that's right, limited, so we don't really talk about that much.
Well, I mean,
right. But, okay. But how much did you love the extra herb patch, Shane?
No, I loved
it. That was like boom, like ooh,
and right next to easy teleports and right next to a bank chest. They were very kind. That was the other thing, is that Prif was designed to be a very kind skilling place, right? They had banks everywhere. They had all these meta things so packed in together. And the other thing with Cruis too is the like effectively unlimited magic and yew tree leaves for when those logs were so good too. In the spirit tree access, and I mean, just they packed a lot of stuff.
I'm resisting the urge to lead into now there, but we can leave, I think, Cruis there at the then side, because you know that's a good overview of exactly what it was, and we need to have a serious discussion about how useful that's going to be when we get to the then or the now on this one rather. Clan Kadarn, focus around magic and ranged. Elf Slayer? ?
We were talking about this in pre-show that Elf Slayer was an excellent task and still is. But how the I think, and we all mentioned this too, like the real value here is in a lot of the utility aspects, right? Max guild, but also like the book changer for prayers and spells is still used, right?
And also
the jewelry charger.
Yeah, the jewelry charger. I was going
to
say.
Yeah, the fountain to, and so you didn't have to go to the heroes or the legends or the, you know, all the different places that we used to go to charge.
Okay,
our
jewelry. So in effect, then we can call Kadarn a utility area. Then pretty much then with you know
plus max guild
utility plus max guild with the elf
and max guild skilling portals, which need to almost be mentioned separately because
we're going to talk about the max guild.
You don't have to be max,
opens,
but you got to be,
because that opens up a whole other discussion on that. Ireworth, Malian Slayer, Morvran, top level Slayer master in game. I think I didn't find the Morvran Slayer task list too bad. What did you think of it, Tannis?
That was my favorite. That's how I got my 120. Honestly, I thought, so we had Rush of Blood before we had Shattered Worlds, and it was kind of like the first, what am I trying to say? You know, where it was mob after mob, wave based kind of Slayer, which I enjoyed. Now, it always went too fast. I wish there hadn't been the time limit, you know, which made it difficult for me. But I loved the concept, and I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, that's fair. And you know, there's a discussion we'll have about this on Modern Power Creep regarding the Slayer challenge on when we get to the now section on this. There was also with this a crystal chest in the Ireworth area with slightly boosted reward tables for opening up crystal keys and such.
emphasis on slightly.
Yeah, very slightly.
People overstated how strong this was, I think, for a very long time.
Yeah.
But access to a crystal chest that is closer to a bank than the one in Taverly was at the time.
Yeah.
We'll leave that to now, but...
Yeah, exactly. Ithil, crafting and construction, harmonic dust, brought us tier 70 crystal tools and weapons. Emphasis on the tools, specifically the hatchet. Still the best hatchet in the game today.
Yeah, but what it brought us was passive, free, free crafting. And if you didn't mind just sitting there listening to beautiful music, well, hey.
And I have to ask you, you know, on the whole vision side and whatnot with this, you can tell when it was time to retune and reclick with this just based on listening to it.
Yep, absolutely.
Yep.
So
spent way too much time sitting at those ARPs.
Yep.
And in all honesty, too, the other thing was that before Perf's release and after Perf's release, you saw a massive swing in the price of soft clay. Because when you would mine already watered clay during the hour there, and you could mine massive volumes of it, and it had the ceramics table to make urns. Like this area was designed with flasks and urns in mind. It is the production, it's crafting that is both thematic and functional. Very well done for this.
Yeah. You know, and it gave you a new daily that you did that crystal, like every day.
Well, yeah. The only thing that is missing here, and this is, I think, the biggest thing that was, I'm going to say air quotes promised, air quotes suggested in design documents that really didn't ever make it into the city, was a workbench outside of the house. Now we've got portable workbenches, and right. So frankly, at this point, I almost want them to just stick a permanent portable workbench in the Ithil district and give it a plus 20% experience boost when Voss is active there.
That's actually a good idea.
Yeah, not like at all.
Like it wouldn't be that hard to do.
No, I don't think so. I mean, there was an argument against it, but now we have portable workbenches. So congratulations, you've played yourself. Gimme.
Yeah. And then we're going to have another interesting discussion on the now side of this one, too, because I have some interesting ideas about what this is going to mean for mid-level people coming in, specifically with Fresh Start Worlds and such.
I mean, Fresh Start Worlds, if anybody's getting to Prif in Fresh Start Worlds, they know what they're doing.
Yeah. There's going to be some people who do.
Yeah, but I mean, are you mid-level to get into Prif? Like, that, you're no longer would consider mid-level.
Here's the deal with that, right? Is that in order to get into Perif, you only need like level 75 in, I think it's 15, 16 skills, plus a little higher in some. And like that's only about 1.5 million XP per skill. Now, some skills, that's a really high volume because the early training methods are very slow.
That's
a lot
thing.
Of skills,
and
that's not that much.
Well, I looked at this. I looked at this while I was gaming out my plan for a fresh start. And
I haven't planned well. Yeah, good for you.
It's not the skill level, it's the skill level with the particular skills that you're looking at. They're gonna be they're very expensive and almost impossible to get that kind of ingredients in early on.
Herb lore is going to be hard.
Yes, what I'm right there.
Specifically, herb lore is going to be hard.
Specifically, herb lore.
Everything else, I think I can manage. There's enough stuff that has bone drops. There's enough stuff that, like, I'll have the combat levels easy.
All right.
Herb lore is going to be hard.
All right. Barring another fresh start diversion, let's move on to Amloth.
Okay.
Yes.
Summoning and divination. It was a very close summoning obelisk to the bank, to the point where with Bladed Dive Surge, you can get there relatively quickly.
Extra scrolls per pouch when you're making scrolls.
And extra shards when you turn them back in.
Beautiful.
And that's the best part of Amlod, because we were racking our heads with this in production. Has anybody actually ever used the divination training method here as a divination training method? Aside from getting the
Slayer training method.
Slayer.
Aside from getting
those
the course.
Are not. If you want a pet, it's a nice pet. If you want some Slayer XP, it's nice Slayer XP. There's literally a reward for turning in the title, like the equivalent of like kill 1,000 elves, kill like
yeah.
Do, there's so many things that like these titles are like do 10 dark beast tasks. And yeah. For these guys, it's turn in 25 of those cores.
I remember that. I remember that
get
on my
25
top grind.
XP drops in divination. It is not a divination trading method.
No.
You get divination XP from it. There's a giant divination crater there.
And I guess
so
it kind of
it's very divvy, but why?
Right, and it kind of leans on Ireworth for Slayer then, I guess. So,
which makes sense. They're right next to each other, kind of.
All right,
it falls in the way, but
let's talk about the now then on these, and let's just unwind it and actually go in reverse and start with the now on Amlod. Place to train summoning. No questions asked, I think.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's definitely hyper-efficient summoning training. If you have an abundance of charms and an abundance of money, you can sell secondaries to pick up sticks as shop noted, and when you rebuy them, they will be unnoted. You will lose some as his shop stock degrades over time, even though it is personal to you, so nobody else can buy them. So it bumps up the price, and you obviously do not get the extra 20% extra XP. But with a deposit box also located there, if you put a portable deposit box, you can... That is 5 to 10 times the XP rate of this, and this is the second best in the game.
Okay.
So that is...
So it's a question of if you want to go to that extent then.
It's not meta, air quotes, but it is very good. It gives the best place to make pouch, to make scrolls, so stuff like Ripper scrolls, stuff like Meerkat scrolls, right, for the Cluers, is done here on the hour. And then if you're short on charms, right, if you're trying to push for 99 on a lower, on newer account, if you're trying to push for 120 and you don't have a ton of charms left over because you did Slayer really quickly because, you know, you did on DXP or during some event, or you haven't spent how many hundreds of hours at the Archclase or, really good for being, if you're limited on charms, getting the maximum XP per charm. So situationally, it's the best option.
So Amulet still definitely has a good use then.
Yeah,
it has a place. It has a as a method.
I would say, I mean, it's still the meta for turning in your pouches if you're
yes. Oh, if you're trying to get your shards back, absolutely, it's the only way to go. So,
all right,
truth.
Ithil, I think we go there for our flasks and getting harmonic dust for the tools. Or if you're leveling up, like Tana said, you still can do it if you want for relatively slow-ish crafting XP.
If you're running planks to your house from... If you're not using Protean planks, if you're
good,
not using a
good
butler.
Good call. That's another one before that. The POH
and it is
there.
Better... Like, the crafting XP actually is much, much better. It has been buffed. Now compared to then, so it is better XP now than it was.
It's also a very accessible housing agent for construction contracts. And like you're saying, I mean, great for harmonic dust. You still have to do harmonic dust to get those new tools. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, that tools or attuned weapons, any of that. It's the best source for crystal parts if you need them for invention. It's obviously the soft clay is still, I mean, that's the primary source of soft clay for the game, except for Crocs.
And I was going to say, anybody who is just getting into Prif and wants to make urns, this is where you do it. And, you know, given the amount of the urns that are going to be needed, this might be an interesting thing to focus on if you're just leveling up.
You get extra urns if you do urns at a portable crafting station, so... Less meta than it used to be.
Okay. And I think we rolled that in now, the meta discussion in terms of just discussing around this, what was meta, what was not.
Yeah, of course. I mean, what is used. That's, you know, part of the how is it used now discussion, how is it used then. Portables changed a lot of this by giving us a lot of these same buffs. Literally, portable braziers gave, when Prif came out, and this is, I'll dive into Kaedon a little bit too, and like that Max Guild fire and the fire in the Tower of Voices had special buffs on them that the portable brazier shared. That's something else. The portable brazier shares and has other things for it. Yes, indeed. Lordy.
What just happened here?
Don't worry about it. But yeah, no. So that's something else too, is that the portables have taken a lot of these kind of benefits, and given them back to us in ways that don't necessarily require Prift to the same level. But
yeah, okay.
And even so, without the buffs, the thing about the bonfire there was the bank chest, right? Like now with the portables, you can plop them anywhere, but then
it's one or two steps away from the max build chest or the chest in the Tower of Voices.
Right, and that's where I do all my cooking.
Yep, that's true too. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I guess that's still the best place in it. I mean, other than, again, portable ranges, but...
yeah.
But that's a different discussion entirely. Moving to Ireworth, Morgan's Slayer Challenge, still something that is I guess it's fun to do. It's become a lot easier over the years with some of the power creep that we have.
I mean, the methods to complete it have become more obvious, but Steel Titan scroll spamming was still a thing on release.
I still used him in my 120 Slayer grind over Lanikea.
I honestly, when Lanikea came out, I preferred the Lanikea tasks.
I actually did too, but when I was doing my 120 grind, I used him for a lot of it. Him and to like a lesser degree, Curdal and actually Simona. If I was just really feeling chill and I just didn't wanna, I did a lot of Simona tasks. But
Simona was good for later content, right? Well, for Minifolth or Sylphenheim.
Oh, true. True, 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 true. Yeah. Forgot about that. That was when I used it. So, the thing with Morvern Slayer Challenge too is that it is a source of Ushabti. So if you don't have a lot of Slayer points because you've been using Treasure Hunter or other things to get your Slayer up, he does give those Ushabti. He also, Slayer VIP tickets drop out of his weekly as well. So if you are not doing Cabbage Face Punch Bonanza, which understandably is not
a
cup of tea.
You're not.
Yes, that's true. That's another source of those, especially for like Iron Men and similar. I guess I'm assuming they can use them. Where you don't have to pay the Traveling Merchant and wait for them to show up on the Traveling Merchant, which would be the alternative too. There's still rewards from the area that are worth completing for, and obviously titles and comp and all of that. So,
and I feel like looking at the Lanikea task list and then the Mandrath task list that we got just recently, I feel like the Morvern task list is also very traditional compared to those two. It's a very traditional Slayer task list.
It's just a bunch of high level monsters,
yeah.
As opposed to variety or cluster tasks or specifically demons or anything. So he's got a very standard. Let's do a nice variety of Slayer stuff. So he's got a flavor that's his own that is still used. So.
Yeah, and we talked about the Qadarn district being the utility area with the elves for magic and ranged tasks and whatnot. We'll talk about the Max Guild later on that, but I still feel like the utility of the book swap and the prayer book swap is still there. Obviously we have the magic book swap on the magic cape and whatnot, and spell book swap for one that we can use, but I still feel like this is a place that I go sometimes to swap prayer books and spell books in the off chance I need to and I'm not at a bank. I'm just running
that's where
something.
I go.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Magic books less so. Now the magic cape has a perk, but on release, of course, all the time. And for prayers, which I swap prayers much less frequently, but there are still times where I need regular prayers to not reflect damage onto things. That's the option. So,
yeah. Okie dokie, Cruis, the one we have to talk about. Obviously, the farming patches are appreciated. That
Shane saved the farming one for last,
but. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in Cruis from the woodcutting side, I think, that, I mean, it's no longer the top XP. I mean, obviously,
Elder,
if you're just getting...
Elder, I mean, no, it's no longer the top, but...
No.
I mean,
if you're, like, if you're just
great.
Getting into Prif, the Ivy is going to be good still, but...
Yes.
I don't think it's... And I'm going to say, I don't think it's fair necessarily to put Cruis in a bad light because of this is a problem with woodcutting.
Yes.
Well, and it is like Cruis is just, it's an easily accessible bank chest. It is a good travel method to get to the trees if you don't want to use a spirit tree rerouter. Right? Being able to teleport there.
And it's where I finish all my herb runs.
Of course, naturally, because that's.
And it's part of my elder patient. Always.
Because it's an easy teleport. So, I mean, it still has a use. I'm going to say that use is probably a little less than it was now
right,
that we've got spirit
and
tree rooters.
And it's only diminished because of the wood of the woodcutting side, I feel.
Yeah.
Possibly. Although, how has woodcutting changed since it was released? Other trees were there on release,
kind of
right?
Crystallized Acadia, bamboo.
Crystallized Acadia and bamboo. Yeah, that's fair.
And crystal trees.
Actually, that's very fair.
Yeah.
Crystal trees were there, though. Crystal trees existed on Prif's release. Were they not?
I don't think so.
I'll double check real quick.
Yeah, we got to figure. Oh, they were. Crystal trees came out October 2013.
For real?
With
okay.
Elder Trees, an update called Treevolution.
I'll be damned.
So, I mean, technically that IRE has never been fully Bastion's thought, I don't believe.
Well, I mean, it
actually.
You need like level 90.
You didn't have to bank.
You need 94 woodcutting to cut crystal trees, so obviously.
I mean, so if you only have 75 when you get into Prif,
exactly. So that's the use case for that. But once again, this is a problem with woodcutting that we can't let it taint the design of Prif, I feel. Mm-hmm. And once again, I feel like even though these were the non-pull-based skills, I still feel like they did a pretty good job in terms of handling the design of these and making sure all the synergies were there and they operated nicely.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and I should note too, looking at the XP rates for Ivy at level 80 with plus 20% XP, it actually is relatively competitive with crystal trees. So you get your crystal geodes in it, so it's a viable option when the Voice of Saren is active there, even still. So, yeah.
Good. And I had to, this next one, I had to be told to put this in by Tanis. You wanted a section on waterfall fishing that doesn't have a then because it wasn't there. It just has a now. But you want to call this part of Prif, I don't call it part of Prif because it wasn't there.
No, the then and now, it wasn't then and it is now. Yeah, it's definitely, if we're doing a retrospective, I'm with Tanis on this one. Go for it, Tanis. You tell us about waterfall.
Okay, sell us on this. I hate the damn thing, but...
I love the damn thing.
So, you got to look at this and where it's at. So, it wasn't there in the beginning. Now it is, but its high point was between it being introduced to the game and before deep sea fishing. Okay. Yeah. Like it's still the best AFK traditional fishing.
Ding. AFKable. That's the thing. Yeah. You never have to bank. You can just stay there until you get your pet.
And you do get the bonus crystal urchins, you know, which can really kind of, it's a nice little something at the end of it. But it is going to be the best next to doing whack-a-mole fishing.
Yes, the fishing frenzy at the Deep Sea Fishing Hub. It's true.
Yeah. So I'm, you know, I got my 120 fishing, on waterfall fishing. We call it Pride Rock. You know, I spent a lot of time up there.
Fishvention brought me there for a long, long time. I got a lot of invention experience standing on top of that rock.
Yep, me too.
You know, that's actually an interesting point now that you mention it, Fishvention. I did do fishing to get parts of my 120 invention, but I don't think
when I wanted to AFK it, that's where I went.
Yeah. Okay.
Something to remember.
And you know, once again, for folks who listened to the podcast back in the day will know that the part of the reason I hated this thing is that it was the winner of a poll that where our greenhouse came in, or the greenhouse was an option at one point, and then the greenhouse never happened, and so on and so forth.
But it was but waterfall
greenhouse
fishing
got replaced from
Manor
Farm, and that turned out well.
Yeah.
But that wasn't what beat the greenhouse. That was the aquarium.
That was the aquarium.
Waterfall fishing you hated because you didn't think it fit thematically.
Right, and then
the
it was
dungeoneering.
Right, the lore aspect of it as well. True.
Yeah.
True. And this raises this question was brought up by Sirion on this. In terms of, you know, looking at what they do for updates, there's always a push to add new areas to the game, right? But with the waterfall fishing, what this is this is in effect adding to and revamping something rather than just adding a new area. Because they could have put the waterfall fishing anywhere else in the world, but instead they decided to put it in Perif.
Again, Perif is the skilling hub, right? Like,
and when you look at high level
skilling, when you look at skilling above level 80 and above level, you know, 75, whatever, Perif is where you go. If you want the method, there's a pretty good chance you're going to be living in, you know, Perifscape, Elfscape was the meme for years because we never left, right?
Yeah,
like if you were working on Max, and a lot of us were for a long time when the XP rates were lower, especially, like, you lived in Perif. You did your mining in Perif. You did your woodcutting in Perif. You followed the voice of Saren to different parts of the city for different things, and you would stay there for weeks and months to complete, air quotes, the city by getting all of your crystal tools done, by getting the skills done. The meta is you do them in Perif. You spend your agility levels there. When the voice of Saren was active in those districts, you traveled. It gave you an excuse to take a break from one skill and go train another. Mm-hmm. It gave you the best in slot method for so many things. And so from that aspect, the waterfall does belong there. But of course, now the deep sea fishing hub has given us another medium to high level fishing option that is, of course, better.
Right, and it underscores why it's important to ask the question, can this be added to anywhere else in game, or does this make sense anywhere in game, and then we can adjust the theme on it, rather than just adding it in a new area.
It was nice of them to bundle it in with the
exactly.
other equivalent yeah. skilling methods, level-wise, right? And so they made it thematic to the elves. Take it or leave it. It was a great update, and it's still used, I think, in some situations, so it's good.
So Tanis, I mean, this was your baby on this one. Anything else you want to add to it?
No, I mean, I still think for me it was the most viable option in your 120 grind, because let's face it, I'm not going to do whack-a-mole, and I don't know a lot of people that do.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It's so high effort. No it shot is, am I going to train fishing like that. I don't make any money, and I spend a bunch of effort. Yeah, faster XP. All right, efficiency experts, go be assholes. Go do it.
Yeah,
no, I don't need it.
Like I tried it a few times for just, you know, seeing what was capable and whatnot. And I was only able to keep it up for, you know, 4 or 5 minutes or so with that. So
I've done a few hours of it.
Like, okay,
it becomes eventually you just get into a rhythm. You can do it while you're AFKing or listening to podcasts, listening to music, even watching some shows you don't have to pay very close attention to. But
yeah,
my favorite thing was watching
the XP graph and making sure it would just keep bouncing up when you would need to click it and whatnot. So, but. All right. You know, we would be remiss if we didn't mention thieving, because you can run entire loops around the city and thieve. Yep. And when this came out, Perif thieving was provided as a way to train the skill without needing to consistently click targets. And when you think about it, where Perif thieving landed, it was the XP rate that was designed to take a player from their 90s into 99 when going for 99 thieving. Because
table competitive XP rates, sign me up, I'm in.
Right.
Well, I got my thieving pet here. I got my thieving here.
And a great cash cow on release too.
Absolutely. I think it's important to mention, right? If you wanted to do the sweatiest of thieving, dwarf traders were always going to be an option.
Dwarf traders or pyramid plunder, yeah.
But no, when it comes plunder. To like overall the best training, when you take into account everything, I think Perif wins it hands down. Now we'll have a discussion about now and what has you know, kind of replaced it. But then there was no comparison, right? Like, am I gonna click and follow? You know, pick an elf's pocket. And watch something, do something, talk to my friends, rather than like going crazy at Dwarf Traders, yeah, I mean, that's definitely what I'm going to choose to do. And Pyramid Plunder is a pain in the ass. No one really liked doing it.
Like, I wanted those outfit pieces, but then they made them available at one of the Vic the Trader brothers. I'm like, thank you. I'm out. Yeah, bye.
Yeah, exactly.
Elves for days, boys.
Yeah. And like you said, Shane, it was good money. I mean, it was really good money. So
it's still decent. Then,
it's still it's decent still with
the supporters and everything. Yeah.
With the thieving cape, it's going to note all that stuff. Like, you're, you know, it's good. It's
potions as well for Iron Man and for people who want to, you know, make extremes and whatnot. The base super potions are there too from some of the clans.
Dungeoneering tokens for those of us who are Dungeoneering challenged.
Oh, and that's right. That's always good. And the blue dust for the anti-fire potions too.
Mm-hmm. And Saren cleansing stones for the prayers. Like, I mean, there was a lot of valuable nonsense that dropped out of these. So,
yeah. But now we have safe cracking, and you know, Prif is still very good for the AFK option. I think.
Yeah, it still wins the AFK option, and it, you know, it's still a good all around. But
it wins the profit option. The profit isn't great, but compared to safe cracking. Gives you nothing, you know? Like, exactly. This still will give you a few mil an hour, potentially, so.
Right, and that's even after it was toned down, because it was toned down a couple times in the months following its release.
Yeah, a couple times.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I must have started, because I think I started playing again in the, like, November, December, maybe. It was after all 8 districts were released, and they recolored the city from blue to white.
Yeah, it was stupid good. It was stupid good.
I don't even think I had the thieving level to play that actually on release. I don't think I did, if I had to guess. I think I probably would have been still mid-80s at that point.
Yeah, it was really good. But the safe cracking, you know, I mean, it is the
goat.
I know. I mean, yeah, it's the go-to. I guess technically you could squeeze out maybe more at Dwarf Traders, but
I believe you can. Dwarf Traders requires so much effort to set up.
Exactly.
And it's Dwarf Traders are sweaty.
Exactly.
And I don't thieve to be sweaty. If I'm gonna be sweaty, I'm gonna go boss and make real money.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna AFK at my elves.
Yeah, and when you think about it. And when you think about it, safe cracking kind of hit that right in the middle of that, right? Like, you got a little bit of active play, but it's not as bad as Dwarf Traders.
What about Sticky Fingers?
The relic power?
Yeah.
I mean, it would be... I think Sticky Fingers has an excellent place before 90. Every one of these methods we're talking about right now is a 90-plus method. Sticky Fingers is like, I need to steal a bunch of Phoenix Feathers for anti-fire potions. You know, it's Sticky Fingers is a low level.
Oh, I never thought about that for things. Phoenix Feathers. Interesting.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, it's really nice for those. Well, I mean, given the outfit also has the Sticky Fingers effect, right? So like. Once you get the thieving outfit, which again, you're at those very high level points. Sticky Finger is valuable if you are one of the people who realizes that archaeology is the best skill in the game early on, and then get Sticky Fingers, and is like, aha, well, that's it now. I guess I can. Thieving has just become easyscape. Let's go, dude. But I don't think there's any other NPCs that are more worthwhile in terms of XP or GP to thieve than elves with Sticky Fingers.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, it's Sticky. Sticky Fingers, I never really pursued that because I figured I had equivalent with legendary 5-finger discount.
Well, Sticky Fingers is the you pick repeatedly, right?
Yeah, that's what Sticky Fingers does.
It allows you to pick repeatedly, and you get that, I believe, from the full completed 15-piece thieving outfit. If I'm not incorrect on that.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it seems like I'm doing, like I was always doing that anyway, but I believe you do. Okay.
You get a similar effect at least.
Yeah, that's true. Except I don't think it can go for as long. So.
Right. I mean, again, I think regardless, there's just not an NPC that is
that doesn't
do
fit.
That for you.
Yeah, and what this does is it raises the question, you know, was thieving going in this direction and being more AFK one of the easiest skills to get to 99 post safecracking post Priv, before Priv, or was it Priv that started these changes for thieving? I wonder, because thieving went from one of the skills with the fewest 99s, 120s, and 200 mils before Priv and safecracking. Now it's one of the ones with the most.
I mean, again, you put that much profit and that much XP on the table and you make it AFKable, and you'll have people getting 200 mil because why not?
Why not? Why wouldn't you?
You know, I think that's the argument. I think that is a valid argument to make, frankly.
You know, so, I wish I was thinking about this when we did the tier list. I'm trying to remember where we rated thieving, Tanis. I'm not going to say for the... Okay, we rated it in a good spot in terms mm-hmm. of in terms of this, so I'm happy with what we said on thieving and what we're talking about mm-hmm. now. But,
indeed.
With that, I answered our second question on that, so we can move on to the max guild. With that, max guild, huge achievement for lots of people when Priv came out. Lots of people still weren't maxed. Many more
Nobody.
Are maxed now.
I mean, very few people were maxed back then. It was an incredibly mm-hmm. small part of the player population.
And yeah, and it was designed
that
to be
now
that,
changed significantly.
Be that place where you show off. You have the banners. You had the throne if you earned comp. And remember even how rare that was if you got into...
I mean, that's... I think when they released, it was like... I want to say it was 0.2% of the player population was comped or trimmed at the time. I think it was comped. You couldn't sit in the throne. And then also, and I don't even know if they mentioned this, but the throne does have a special animation for if you sit in it while you are trimmed. It adds a bunch of extra animation and stuff around your character model and above your character to display that you are a trimmed completionist. Like, it's that throne is nutty. Also, the fact that when that throne came out, it restored your prayer and your summoning points. Like, people didn't realize that. But that throne is an altar and a summoning obelisk next to a teleport, infinite teleport.
And like, then you kind of see where we're going in terms of how War's Retreat became needed and whatnot. With
and
that.
A GE and a boss portal, right, effectively was... all of the War's Retreat. Given War's Retreat requires you to boss before you can unlock those things, right? You have to have 500 boss kills or whatever to unlock the
You
altar.
Had the decanter. You had, I mean, we lived in the max guild. I remember the thrill, but even before you could make it, I mean, walking through those doors was a big deal. But even before that, every thrill, you know, undoing a banner, it was
double fireworks. You got your 99 fireworks, and then the banner shot off more fireworks when you went over there after you collected your cape.
And I need to be honest,
part
with
of 99
guys.
Parties.
Yeah. Need to be honest with you guys. I didn't start actually using the max guild religiously until I started PVMing.
I mean, there's an argument too for like you being in the max guild. You often only see people in the max guild. It very much put you in a bubble, you know, much less so now with War's Retreat, but max guild used to be you didn't have a reason to go anywhere else, and you used it so much that the Tower of Voices wasn't as necessary.
And that's where,
and so,
I mean, that's where all my friends were, right? Like that's where all my that's where all my friends were. We all were in the max guild.
Yeah, so
RuneScape's third Grand Exchange.
Yes.
And I realize we didn't talk about the Tower of Voices through this and the second Grand Exchange that was added, but we'll come back to that talking about Priv as a whole and summing things up.
We mentioned the Crystal Tree. It's good farming XP. We mentioned the bonfire, good cooking and fire-making spot with buffs, right? The constant bonfire buffs. That was new. I mean,
but
and
now,
then the golden statue, which you also...
Max is still an accomplishment, I feel, today. It's much more common, though.
Oh, of course. Yes.
And I think now, Max Guild, before War's Retreat, acted as the PVM hub with its singular PVM portal. And one of the things that people wanted following War's Retreat was a question of, you know, does the Max Guild need something else? And, you know, I still think that's a very pertinent question today. Does the Max Guild need something else?
Should it have a permanent portable skilling station in the corner? Should
that
it
could
have
be
a,
used for any of this?
An invention workbench would be.
Invention workbench, construction, like any of those kind of workstations could potentially be good just to like have something really close to a bank. But the other thing was, and I agree with the argument for this, is that you're locking the thing that they said about the Max Guild that they disliked was that it, and the Max Cape, and they said this all during like the Cape rework, they disliked that it locked some content behind unrelated content.
Right.
It wasn't that you achieved 99 and then suddenly you had the best access to things, right? The Warriors Guild was you got into this and then you got access to this like combat training stuff, and that made sense. And the Max Guild, you maxed and you got all these perks. And I don't want the closest anvil in the game to a bank to be in the Max Guild. I don't want the closest, like, it almost irks me that the bonfire is there. And if braziers didn't exist and portable, if the portables didn't exist, I would actually probably still take issue with that bonfire in the Max Guild being there,
right. Because
it locks cooking training method behind, you know, 99 Slayer.
Right. And
like all of these other things.
And in many ways, that doesn't fit with what the game does presently, because with War's Retreat, with the Comp Cape update, there has been that decoupling of all these achievements from all of them together.
Right.
And the Max Guild is a relic from the era where those were all brought together in one big glob. And so the question is, what do you do with the Max Guild?
I am all for the Max Guild giving you bonuses, but if they're skill-specific bonuses, I feel like that's a... Like, put those bonuses locked behind 99 in the appropriate guild, right? Put the closest smithing anvil to a bank in the Artisan's Workshop. Put the closest, and say, this is the 99. This, you have to have a Cape 10 to this area. Do the same thing with crafting in the crafting guild. Put a really close bank to a furnace or something, right? Like... I don't know.
I think we have that for the most part, but what we got to keep in mind with Max Guild is the training that is there, the bonfire, for example. Mm-hmm. This isn't 99 training, right? Like, you have to be Max to get there. This is 120 training.
That's true.
Which is, you know, that's a different animal. For me, it's still super valuable because that's the Grand Exchange I use.
Me too.
It's you know, that's the one I, the Grand Exchange.
And it is a bonus to being maxed, and that seems like a fair bonus. You've completed all of your skilling, now you get a Grand Exchange that is, in essence, 3 squares, like literally 1.2 seconds, closer to a teleport location, right?
Yeah.
And you can teleport to that while in combat. Woo. As opposed to not being able to teleport to like a lodestone to the Tower of Voices if you're in combat. It's the like, congratulations, welcome to the next stage of the game.
But so you guys then don't necessarily view it as a replacement central hub, because you're going to go to different hubs along your adventure.
And I mean, it is my hub.
Okay.
It is the place that I go to.
Well,
like,
what do you use more than? What would you use more than that or War's Retreat?
I use War's Retreat only if I'm PVMing. If I'm needing to go to the Grand Exchange or just to use a bank, I teleport to Max.
Yeah, and this isn't like, I'm sure no one else really does this, but I still use the combat portal in the Max.
The combat portal in Max is a great Krosis portal, in my opinion, because you don't have to have adrenaline when you go through into Krosis. You don't have to have, like, I keep Krosis there. And occasionally God Wars 2 stuff, if I just want to.
It's also
one.
A good portal if you haven't thing, killed, like, killed the boss yet. Because you can portal with that.
And I'm not doing anything
I forgot about that.
Super high level where I have to, you know, got to have the adrenaline. I've got to have da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I mean, I'm doing God Wars 1 and 2 stuff.
Tandis,
you know,
shows
core.
Up in his crypt limb and is like, I don't need that adrenaline. What you talking about, Willis? I'm golden.
I don't need none of that. I mean, is he in Legacy? Yeah, he's in Legacy.
God bless. Look at the way that man's holding his two hands. That man is a Chad.
See, I came into this thinking that, you know, the discussions that were had about the Max Guild after War's Retreat came out would have meant that we needed some key changes to the Max Guild for this. But based on what you guys are saying, it sounds like the way you guys view the Max Guild is that it's still very usable for how it was initially intended, specifically for that 99 and beyond area in Tanis's case.
Yeah. And I had that fear, right? Like when Worth Retreat came out, I definitely had that fear. I'm like, oh no, we need more now.
Right. It is a similarly close bank chest.
Well, remember Mod Raven?
Doesn't have the GE.
Mod Raven was scouting for ideas of what could be done to improve the Max Guild, and that project never came out. So what I'm betting is that the design brains inside Jagex came to the same conclusion, as that is really not needed.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. You know, it's one of those things where you kind of put the cart before the horse. You get a little bit worried, like, oh, this going to make Max Guild good content, but it couldn't. It didn't.
No. I mean, until they make a Grand Exchange that you literally teleport into a Grand Exchange booth,
please
you can't kill Max Guild. Like, there's no reason. There's no way. Yeah. Max Guild will always have prestige. You will always be like, you will always be able to go there and find your maxed friends because they will be doing the same thing.
Can you imagine the prestige that's going to be around this for the first person to enter Max Guild on Fresh Start Worlds?
Oh yeah, man. I can imagine one golden halo in their name.
Exactly. Well,
there's high scores.
Somebody will get
max in the first 8 weeks, like without any kind of a question.
Yeah.
I think my bet is 5 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, but you just came up with a wonderful idea. Remote, what's the remote farming spell? But this would be remote Grand Exchange. We'll call it Amazon.
Oh, no. 2-day delivery.
This is 2-day delivery Amazon for RuneScape.
And then the little bird flies in with your GE offer.
Oh, no. I do not approve of this suggestion.
All right. Well, let's start talking. Let's start bringing this back and talk about Priff as a whole, as a hub city and whatnot. You know, we talked about the ability with the Ultra's Change spellbook and prototypes, Dragonstone Jewelry Charges, the Crystal Chest, the Slayer Master, all the farming patches, the Dungeoneering Sinkholes, the Summoning Obelisk, so on and so forth. Everything within Priff. It's the definition of a hub city, something that you could say that Varrok or Falador would have been in 2002 when RS first came out. It would have fit that category back then. But obviously by 2014 and even today, there's a different definition of what the hub city is. And, you know, it definitely was this in 2014. It scratched that itch. And, you know, you guys can tell me how you guys feel on this, but my usage of Priff has actually gone down over the years, believe it or not.
Yeah, I mean, they've when it released, it was meta for everything. It pretty much was. You used it for everything. Now, they've released new methods for a lot of those things. And so you come back to Priff to like restock, and I think that that's healthy. We don't make Elfscape jokes as much anymore, you know?
And people called it so overpowered at the time, too.
It was.
Tannis, you always like your power creep.
I will always like my power creep, but what we have now that we may not have had then as much is we have choices, right?
Yes.
Like now we can.
Priff is always still a choice. Yeah.
Yeah. And Priff is right up there to choose, and it has reasons to choose it. But before if you were anybody, that choice was made for you. You had to get the Priff.
I mean, it's still a milestone. Walking into Priff, yeah. Like I said, that cutscene, you know it's coming. You know what's in Priff now. And the journey to get there is so climactic with that entry cutscene, with that entry dialogue, that like it feels like such an accomplishment to make it to Priff. It still does, and it unlocks so much.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't undersell it. It's still amazing. It's still relevant.
You remember that journey.
Yeah, I mean,
this raises another question with this. Do you need another? Puzzles. Do you need a hub city beyond Priff for people who are maxed and beyond that? Or I think
no.
I'm going to say no. Priff still fits that niche. I think.
Priff is the like highest, has generally speaking some of the highest training methods in the game, right? If you wanted another hub city, it would have to be in the Ark, right? Like that's probably where it would fit, is the like the Priff would then be the level 70-80 hub city, and the level 90-95 hub city would be somewhere in the with the Ark content, because that's where a lot of those skilling methods are already located. There's a world where you could make that and have fun with it, and there's certainly lore that would support it. But for right now, I don't think there's a reason to do that.
Yeah.
And I don't think Prif should be or ever could be surpassed until all skills go to 120. And
that's true.
Then we would have, you know, a level 110 kind of, you know, 10 to 20.
That could be crazy. That could actually be super cool.
Right, and then at that point you're talking about an entirely different existence of what RuneScape is. And once again, this is this central conversation we've been having about what is the definition of RS3, right? Do you take it beyond that perspective? Do you make it the PVM version of RuneScape, or do you make it the Fashionscape simulator? And there seems to be right, and that's a discussion I'd like to see answered by Jagex. You know, do we take it that one step further, or do we, you know, make a RuneScape 4 kind of thing? But obviously, Prif was very successful, and there's two other updates that come to mind in the same kind of vein as this: Anachronia and Menaphos. And the question is, looking at these going back, how does Prif compare to Anachronia and Menaphos?
Head and shoulders above? I mean, head and shoulders above for me.
It's the prototype for what those updates should be and tried to be, right? Menaphos in particular was a very direct, we're going to put district, we're going to put a method, skilling methods that are new in each district are aimed at a specific level of player. In that case, it was mid-level players. But the thematic for that to me is that RuneScape is your archetypical swords and, you know, dragons and high fantasy, you know, like RPG, like elves, the elf cities. Elves are always held in high fantasy, generally speaking, where they're not held to be gremlins. They're held to be the higher civilization, and reaching, like, that is because it is so archetypical fantasy to me. I think that made Prif, and the fact that it is that high-level hub that everyone used, right? We've talked about this before, that the way the XP curve is done, that means that you get 2/3 of your XP when you're at the levels for Prif or higher, right? You do, when you're on your way to maxing. That makes it a more important hub. That makes it, and they did such a good job with so many methods and so many things and the true volume of content. And they tried to mentor that on a smaller scale for a different tier of players with Menaphos and in a different style. And that's, I mean, it would be the same argument to making something in, you know, like the Ark of those islands, is that, like, it doesn't have that fantasy archetype to it.
Yeah, well, and even when you look at, like, there, it does have so many parallels. And look at it this way, like, how Menaphos was the city that we knew was there, but we never could enter, and it took forever to show up. Mm-hmm. But it didn't have that same emotional connection that Kryptonus did.
Right.
Right? And that carried over.
You walk in with a level 1 quest. Like, yeah. You do. Yeah.
Exactly.
And Anachronia, on the other hand, was designed to be an island, our version of Fossil Island, that was meant to be as a lore vessel, but at the same time, you compare Anachronia to Menaphos and to Prif, you ask anybody about these people, are going to say Prif was the most successful of the three. I think
it was the biggest by far.
Yeah. I think Menaphos was successful in its own ways, which we'll be hearing more about when Fresh Start comes about, but it's hard to compare Prif to Anachronia and Menaphos. I really do think it is,
I mean, I think it's like comparing it to the Ark. It's like comparing it to Elder God Wars. It's like all of these larger things that in other games would be expansion level content. Because they all are. They're all entirely new zones. I mean, it would be the same thing as comparing it to, like, the release of Mauritania, however you want to say it, right? Like that, when that came out, yeah, there were some new methods there. There were new Slayer monsters. There were new hubs. It was a new city, new region.
New look.
New look, new vibe. Perif was just, of all the regions ever released to the game, I think most people would say, yeah, it was the king. It's the best.
Yeah.
They hit the nail on the head.
So you guys would say then that the success has not been met by Anachronia and Metaphos then?
No, the closest...
They're beautiful and gorgeous, but yeah, they don't strike for me the same timber.
Yeah, that's what I see, and I was going to say something very similar. They don't compare to Priv, but the closest it comes probably is the look, the graphics of Anachronia is special in its own way. You know, it's not the same, but...
That says a lot coming from you. You do not love that place. We know
I
this.
Do not. But you're, I respect it. You know,
they did
like
a good job with designing it.
Yeah.
Jungle.
And I guess that leads us to the final question about this. And, you know, was Priff RuneScape's first expansion by any other name?
I think it was the first expansion in RuneScape 3.
Fair.
Yeah.
I think RuneScape 2, if you want to go, you know, back to the dark days, I think they would argue that there were other things that added a similar volume of content comparatively for the time. But it's one of the most successful, as far as I'm concerned. Still used. We talked about all this stuff. Yeah. Like, well, yeah, still do that. Yep, yeah, people still do that. I'll be doing that next
right.
month.
Right, and that's the thing. People don't put RuneScape and expansion in the same term. And when they did the Metaphos expansion, it was panned because people, the expectation of what RuneScape update cycles looked like wasn't met. But at the same time, we were getting this kind of content, except, you know, batched out. And we could say the same thing with Elder God Wars and the like. So I'm going to say yes, Priff was RuneScape's first expansion. Do you agree, Tanis?
I agree. It's definitely the first expansion since I have been playing the game.
And, you know, that I think should provide an interesting blueprint for updates going forward with that. But I don't have anything else left to say for this then and now. You guys want to end with anything? Any final words on Priff?
We've rambled. We like the place. Yeah. I've made that clear.
It's my favorite update of all time, and it's going to take a hell of a good update to ever top it in my book.
All right. Well, should we ever do a top RuneScape updates of all time, we'll definitely be sure to have you on that episode.
Ooh.
Stop pledging more tier lists until we finish the other tier list, but also yes!
Well, no, we can't do top RuneScape updates of all time until either Jagex stops updating RuneScape 3 or we stop doing the podcast.
Well, we do
the top 20 years. Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. No. We could do that. We could find a reason to do this, Shane.
Yeah.
We shouldn't until we finish our other tier lists.
Alrighty, folks. Tanis, take us into pick of the week then, why don't you?
Okay. So, this week I have a book pick. I know a lot of our listeners are fans of high fantasy like we all are. And I have just discovered, I know this has been around for a while, but I have just discovered a book called The Way of Kings. And this is it Brian Sanderson?
Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon Sanderson. I'm just starting it, but I have really been hooked so far. So because, you know, I am a pretty avid reader, I can tell if it's hooked me in like this, it's definitely worth recommending to other people. The world building that Sanderson does is, it's unlike anything I've ever encountered. It's so different, and that to me is kind of like the beauty of it so far. It's like I've never experienced anything like this. Like, you know, like Game of Thrones was so cool. Like I love that series.
Imagine,
but it
Game
was
of
familiar.
Thrones, there's only three main characters.
Yeah, right. Like it, but there was a familiarity. Whereas this is like
It's whole new world. It's there's new creatures. There's new magic doesn't work in the way that you think the magic works, and he doesn't necessarily explain to you straight away how that magic works.
It's just,
he lets you figure it out with the character, and it's so good. It's true, like storytelling other than exposition, and he avoids so well. Like, I have read a lot of other fantasy that is, I'm going to say, older, like Wizard's First Rule or The Wayfarer's Redemption, that are like, you get into it, and from a modern lens, they're a little uncomfortable in terms of like gender relationships and like the way that like they're very fantasy tropey.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't quite. Something just doesn't. The writing feels. This is written so well and hits all of the right lines. It just feels good.
Yeah.
No, I'm with Tannis on this one. I love this series. Absolutely adore it. And if you want 6,000 or 7,000 pages to read through all of the books, like, you could just read the first book and be happy. Like, you could just pick up the first 600 pages or whatever it is. It's a chonker. And just power through it. And the writing goes so quickly. You truly do not notice.
And would you put this out to somebody who has not read high fantasy before?
I might tell you to start with other Sanderson books first. Mistborn is an excellent option. It is. I mean, again, it is like, I'm looking at it. I have it on my bookshelf right now too. And it is 1,000 pages and it is large. Like, these are chonky.
Yeah. It's a 45 hour audio book.
Yes. Oh, the audiobooks. I would read a chapter before bed. I've always got books on my nightstand. Like, it's not the greatest place to start for high fantasy, but it is very classic high fantasy. It is very well written. It has a unique magic system in it. All of Sanderson's books do. And then if you've read other Sanderson books, you'll see characters. There are a couple of characters that, if you know what you're looking for, you'll recognize them. There's a couple that flow through that have through lines. And so, like, he just ties it all together so well.
And I really appreciate the fact that even if you haven't read fantasy, you've encountered it. You know what a wizard is supposed to be like. You know what a knight is supposed to be like. You know what these
what
archetypes
a slave is supposed to be like.
Yes, yeah. And he takes it and twists it all.
The way you expect it to.
Right, and just like you were saying, like when I first started reading, like in the prologue, I'm going, whoa, what's going on here? Like,
right.
Whoa, like, how does that work?
Like, this world has a whole different set of social constructs in terms of, like, how people are viewed and the roles that they fill and the society and the history of things. And he explains none of that to start off. You do eventually get all of it. You get all of the information. He will eventually give it to you. But he doesn't. He explains it by showing to you. You find out as the characters learn about it. And experience it and go through those aspects of their society. It is then like it's good. It's excellent writing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've put a link to that in Goodreads, which has a link to Amazon and Kindle on that if this sounds interesting to you. But this volume that Tannis is talking about right now, first published in 2010, 1,007 pages. So it's a book.
2010. He's put out 4 or 5 books this length in 10 years? Speaking of Game of Thrones,
I'm already thinking. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
It's literally been a decade.
Dude.
This man's putting out all these. And he has a schedule. If you want to know when the next book is coming out in this series, you look online, and that's the day it comes out, because that's when it comes out. He's like 3 books in advance planning all this shit, because he actually releases things on time.
Are you hearing us? Are you hearing us?
You're talking about George Lucas?
No,
George R. 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 Martin.
Oh, okay.
Game of Thrones author. Same. Also, looking at you, Patrick Rothfuss. I know you're doing so much great charity work, so I'm not actually going to judge you for this. But Patrick Rothfuss, please, the third Wise Man's Fear book. Just gimme Name of the Wind, Part 3. Anyways.
All right.
I can nerd about books.
With that, we have 3 achievements this week. Starting off on the 14th, we have Vagon Bry, who got 99 Constitution, Jakir got 120 Summoning on the 11th, and Skips got 99 Runecrafting on the 9th. And if you guys want to have your achievements,
congratulations! friends.
If you guys want your achievements mentioned, there's two ways of doing that. The first one is to sign up at rsbnb.com/forums. Fill out the profile, enter in your RuneScape name, make a post in the welcoming area or on a podcast episode, and we'll start tracking your 99s and 120s. The second way is to join Clan Quest. Simple as that. And we might work out a third way for people who just want to be on the podcast at some point, but we don't have the form set up for people's names to
let us know
at that point. But if that's something you guys are interested in, having achievements tracked without the need to sign up on our forums or join Clan Quest, let us know, because that's definitely something we can arrange. So, Tanis, what you been up to on RS?
I have been mining, and I, as of now, am about 150k away from 120.
Oh my, 150k XP?
Yeah.
So you're going to get that tonight, then?
Yeah.
Yep.
I was waiting for me during the show.
I thought I would. When we started, I was 600k away.
So close.
Yeah, we were
literally,
so close.
Literally within an hour. Within an hour. That'll be the congratulations on next week's. Wow.
And that's proven to be quite the cash cow for you too. Funded Crypt Bloom and who knows what else, right?
It really has. I think I might have to on my 120 smithing journey, because now I'm gonna have to turn all this into plate bodies again, but maybe I need to get the staff to go with the armor, right? I mean, it seems. I mean, what else am I gonna do, right? I mean,
hey, if you want that as a toy, go for it.
I don't know what else to do. I won't even use it, right? Like I don't know. Am I like the 60-year-old guy buying a Viper that drives at the speed limit? Like, I might be, but it's going to look good, right?
God bless. I mean, you're like the people, the clue doers that buy Eldritch crossbows to have a best-in-slot for killing clue wizards, you know? Power to you. Good for you. You earned it. Take it. Take it and run with it.
It ain't much, but it's honest.
All right. It ain't much, but it's honest.
As for me this week on RS, been progressing along Yak Track, doubled down on not doing the skill and kill, because, you get up to task 15 through 18, you're already looking at 3 hours for the skill and kill, so it's better to actually play the Yak Track if you can.
Congratulations, they finally fixed it. It only took them a couple years.
Yeah, but aside from that, this past week, I completed the MazCab log, which unlocks the Liberator title at 104 Beastmaster kills and 92 Yakka kills, which is...
You lucky son of a gun.
Which is apparently very lucky on that.
It's a one in... He didn't re-roll any Beastmaster. For anybody that knows what this means. This man straight up, he got a 1 in 512 drop for that. He's gotten 9... He got 6 1 in 15 drops, and then 9 1 in 25 to 1 in 30 drops, all in that 200 total kill count.
All
in 100 total kill count. Sorry, I was doing math for counting both drop
rates. I also have 6 MazCab codexes in that run as well.
Which is actually not unreasonable. Those are actually, you should have more than that. So that's actually fine. But you should have actually 9 or 10. But again, if you'd done anything off loot, if you'd done it Shane got very lucky. I'm not upset. It didn't take me 700 or 800 Beastmaster loots to get to where he's at. No.
Yeah. So if you have a dry, the moral of the story is if you're on a dry spell, take Shane. He's got
it's
massive.
True.
You know,
that's
he can
true.
Bring massive WAP.
No,
to
we've
the
been
game
doing Krosis all calendar year and haven't got a single rare yet.
Yeah, but that's because you've also got Sirian in the group, and you have to factor his luck into things as well.
That's true. You're canceling each other out. So Shane will bring you wonderful ass prizes.
I intended to get the Time Weaver title from Carapac this year. I didn't anticipate getting the Liberator title from Mazcap this year, so I'll take that one instead.
Yeah, nobody anticipated that happening. You lucky Tuzzy drop. Grumble, grumble, grumble. Anywho,
how about you, Tuzzy?
Yes, indeedy. I have logged on to do some raids because of who I am as a human. And not a whole lot else. I am waiting for Fresh Start Worlds. I'm very excited for them, but I don't have a whole lot of other content that is keeping me in the game right now. With that said, I did go and take a walk around to see all of the new textures for the free-to-play areas of the game. And I have been super busy the last few weeks. I have not been able to like watch through a lot of what you guys should. I should have watched that nibble, actually, since I did this. But I walked around the free-to-play areas and took a look at everything. And, like, I will say they did a remarkably good job. I'll put my two cents in on that aspect, where, like, the rocks and bushes do not necessarily seem all that out of place. My biggest issue is that they removed the grass textures, and I have no idea if you guys touched on this. But the game world feels very kind of flat 3D map to me right now. In these PvP areas, they look visually much better, right? Like, this is definitely an improvement. But it looks like they did the same thing with this that they've done with a lot of, like, outfit and override pieces recently, where they have made everything simple and blocky and geometric and removed a lot of the, like, niche details and funky shadowing on stuff. I do miss having a lot more of the ground objects and ground texture.
Yeah, I don't remember if we touched on kind that. Of, did we, Tanis?
It looks gorgeous, but it feels a little bald to me. I'm sorry to say. But again, shout out to Mod Blackwick. This is such an improvement. I want them to do it to the rest of the game, but I also would like if they would even just retexture that grass, right? Like, I can't imagine there were that many assets for ground objects, for pebbles and grass. I think that would be a worthwhile use of dev time, similarly to how this was a use of dev time. I think that there would be a lot of value to putting that back, because the game currently looks, the ground looks bald to me. The trees just kind of erupt out of it.
Okay.
In a way that doesn't seem. But it looks gorgeous. Good job. That's what I've done on RuneScape this week.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds good. And we'll be back next week for another episode of Update. If you guys want the podcast delivered automatically to you, subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and more. We're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. That's where we post the video version of the podcast. We also post the nibbles there, little, I don't want to call them outtakes, I guess, clips from the podcast, the best of, so to speak. So if you want
highlights,
that's the word. Thank you. If you want those, check us out at youtube.com/RSBNB. And, you know, like and subscribe greatly helps the channel out. But with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone. See you then.
Ciao. Yeah.